What's happening in there?
History.
History. Historic history.
Did you not know?
Let's do this.
It's up for grabs now! Thomas! Right at the end!
Aguero! I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again! So watch it! Drink it in!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great finals within the game of football. I'm Lewis, here with my co-host Adam.
I love it when you go smooth FM.
Oh yeah, I'm straight into it. It's second nature now, muscle memory.
It's like the caffeine coming out of you.
It's all about the good times here at the Final Countdown. I feel like I'm hosting hospital radio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That was Big Yellow Taxi by Joni Mitchell, a song in which Joni complains that they paved Paradise to put up a parking lot, a measure which actually would have alleviated traffic congestion on the outskirts of Paradise, something which Joni singularly fails to point out, perhaps because it doesn't quite fit in with her blinkered view of the world. Nevertheless, nice song. It's 4:35 a.m. You're listening to Up With The Partridge.
Aha! Good morning.
If you'd like to make us feel better, please leave a little review, a little five-star rating. That would really help us on whatever podcast app you use. Thanks very much, Adam. I'm a born professional. But talking about born professionals or professionalism...
Oh, will you stop with these links?
There is a severe lack of it from Arsenal this season, so we're going to get into that. So we are obviously reviewing the final days of the 1990-1991 season.
God, that's a mouthful.
I know, yeah. It's a little bit of a trip me up, so I'm just going to refer to it as the early 90s.
That's good. I mean, I've just interrupted you and set us up. I have questions about this season because I have some headlines from this season, but none of them give me the answers of who wins,
interesting,
who goes down.
What are your headlines then?
So my headlines are Gazza and Lineker rule the cup.
Yes.
My headline is Dalglish quits.
Yes.
After a four-all, you know, unbelievable game
drama
with Everton. And United awaken.
Yeah.
In the Cup Winners' Cup. But I don't know who wins the league. I don't know who,
that's good,
who does
so
well.
That is basically the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
You've just teased the audience. There, but go, let's get into it. So you're doing my job for me here.
No worries.
So heading into the final days, just for a bit of a spoiler, and then we'll talk about how we get there. Liverpool were obviously looking to defend their title, having won it back from Arsenal the previous year,
yep,
after the drama of Thomas the year before that one. But it is Arsenal that would go on to win the league.
Is it really?
Yeah, with a few games to spare as well. They do it a couple of weeks before the end. They lose only once in the whole season, which is incredible. Still,
the near invincibles.
Exactly, yeah. And they only concede 18 goals.
Oh, which, this is the whole Arsenal back four.
Yeah, it's the birth of that whole thing. Yeah. It was obviously spoofed wonderfully in the Full Monty,
that's
where
right,
they're trying to learn the dance routine and they they just realise it's the Arsenal offside trap. Absolutely incredible stuff. So,
yeah.
1, 2, 3. No, no, no. Jesus Christ. All I want to do is get you in a straight bloody line.
Well, it's the Arsenal offside trap, isn't it? Lomper here is Tony Adams, right? Any bugger looks like scoring. We all step forward in a line and wave our arms around like a fairy.
Oh, well, that's easy.
At the bottom of the league, though, the relegation battle would be a little bit more dramatic and was settled on the final game of the season as Sunderland would join Derby in exiting the top flight. Both teams would end up losing their final league games in a little quirk at, to Man City at Main Road. So one the week before.
No way.
And that was basically what ended their flight.
At Main Road as well.
At Main Road. Yeah. Luton, however, managed to escape the drop on the last day for the third season running.
God,
absolutely incredible stuff.
Living on borrowed time, it seems.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's kind of a sign of things to come. But if we get into the season as a whole, so English football would be basking, obviously, in the afterglow of Italia 90 and our glorious
failure.
Of course,
failure. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, Bobby Robson would bow out and then Graham Taylor would take over as England manager.
Yeah.
Liverpool would share the charity shield, which we don't particularly care about, but they would share it with Man United.
Mention it when it's Liverpool, don't you, mate?
Well, as you know, it's another bit of trophy wear we can add to our wonderful wall of winners. But nevertheless, Man United and Liverpool share it with a 1-1 draw. But again, just a little sign that Man United can mix it with the big boys,
yeah,
which they haven't really shown up until now, but Ferguson is starting to get in the groove. Liverpool were still heavy favourites for the title, though, and would start the season really well under the stewardship of Kenny Dalglish, which, as you mentioned, would not, unfortunately, last the entire season. Liverpool propelled themselves to first place from the off. They took pole position from day one, and it would take them a long time to relinquish that. They were chased down, interestingly enough, by Tottenham, who remained unbeaten until November. So what you're talking about with Gazza and Lineker.
Yeah, I wondered how they did in the league.
Yeah.
Obviously, Gazza was unbelievable in the cup this season.
Absolutely.
But I'm a little bit lost as to where Tottenham were.
No, they do well. From memory, I haven't actually got it written down. I think they finished in the top five in the league, maybe top six.
You'd assume that, wouldn't you?
With
the team that they had.
Exactly.
And the form they were in.
Yeah, and they start to kind of write their own kind of folklore, especially around the cup with this. Their North London rivals, Arsenal, were caught up in a scandal, though, in the previous month. So Tottenham were unbeaten until November. Liverpool were top in November, but it was in October that the massive drama would take place with Arsenal. I don't know if you know about this. Arsenal played a game with Man United, Arsenal winning 1-0.
Yeah.
Both teams, and it's the only time this has happened in the history of the First Division, both teams were docked points following a 21-man brawl between the two teams.
Really?
I don't know if this rings any bells for you.
No, I would just go straight to the Battle of Old Trafford, but that's not this.
No, but they do say that they think this is kind of what sparks the beginning of that rivalry and the bad blood.
Wow.
So all the way back here. So the seeds of the brawl began moments before halftime. It was Anders Limpar who scored for Arsenal. Arsenal had taken the lead through him in the first half, but it was the second half when the kind of the spark ignited, as it were. Limpar was involved in a contest for the ball with Dennis Irwin. And then Nigel Winterburn comes in and absolutely floors Irwin with a tackle. So that's what sparks it all. That causes a melee between both sets of players. Paul Ince comes running over, launches Limpar into the advertising hoardings. So probably like sends him going. And then all but one player gets involved in this brawl. They run from everywhere.
Who's the player that doesn't?
David Seaman.
Go on, Big Dave.
He's probably like, that's too much cardio for me.
He's a man of honour, mate.
He is, that's right. He's just thinking this wouldn't have happened at QPR. Take me back.
Unfortunately, it wasn't the finer points of Limpar's goal that would occupy next day's back pages, but the coarser aspects of the competitive spirit. In other words, the second half brawl.
21 men get involved in the brawl.
Wow.
And we say brawl, it's not a rugby brawl. It's not like punches flying everywhere.
It's slaps and ambos.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that Ince literally launches Limpar into an advertising hoarding is pretty full on, though.
Yeah.
It was Keith Hackett who was refereeing. It didn't last much longer than 20 seconds, apparently.
Right.
But nevertheless, it was enough for the kind of game to be brought into disrepute. And what happened was Andreas Limpar and Winterburn were booked, but nobody else was.
No way.
So it was kind of diffused. And afterwards, Keith Hackett got some praise for saying, you know, he managed it well. Interestingly enough, Arsenal would dock 2 points, but Man United were only docked 1 point. And that was because Arsenal had been involved in the season previous with a similar kind of brawl against Norwich City in the 89 season. So basically, it was kind of like, right, you got away with one, and now we're giving you a slap on the wrist. But both teams fined 50k, which obviously a relative amount back then.
Yeah.
But it was 2 points taken off of Arsenal and one off of Man United.
You just don't imagine they'd be able to get away. The Premier League wouldn't be able to do that now. There'd be such a kickoff.
Points deduction is a severe kind of punishment. But I'm guessing it's because of, obviously, the history of hooliganism from the fans.
Yeah.
You kind of have to have such a hard line with the players.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah, historically, it would have been apt, wouldn't it, at that point in time, just back in Europe.
Exactly, exactly. So I think there was we can't afford to have any tolerance of this kind of behaviour. But despite Arsenal being docked 2 points, it wouldn't slow them down. In this month, though, Everton would sack manager Colin Harvey after their worst start to a league season ever, leaves them third from bottom. But this would be turned around when, do you know who returns?
Joe Royal?
No.
Oh, it's Kendall back?
Yeah, Howard Kendall comes back from Man City.
Yeah.
And there's lovely little quirks. We love our player managers. Peter Reid was then named as player manager of Man City to replace Howard Kendall.
No way.
So a lovely little bit of managerial merry-go-round there.
Nice.
But Everton start to improve. They don't particularly do anything this season, but nevertheless, they're not involved in the relegation scrap because of Howard Kendall. The points deduction didn't slow Arsenal down, as I said. Their famous backline formed the foundation for their increasing form. They survived another huge disruption, however, when a couple of months later, Captain Tony Adams, do you know about this, was sent to jail. for a drink driving offence. So it happened right. in May, just before the season begun, but it took until December for the courts to convict. Right. He was he crashed, unfortunately, his car back in May, like I said, four times over the legal limit. Wow. And obviously we all know now kind of history wise what Tony Adams was going through.
Yeah.
He also said that this is the season that he played three times whilst under the influence. Wow. And including one, I don't mean to laugh or trivialise what he went through, but he got man of the match against Sheffield United or one of them. So, I mean, it tells you the calibre of Donkey Adams, the fact that he can be absolutely lashed and he can still win man of the match.
God, I wonder if the striker next to him knew.
You would assume so.
You would assume so, wouldn't you? Because you'd assume there'd be the smell, but that must have been pretty alarming, even in those days.
Yeah, exactly.
Playing against a central defender that's quite obviously, like,
drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was part of the Tuesday Club, wasn't it? Was it the Tuesday Club? Yeah, that's what Arsenal used to call it. Yeah. Their kind of drinking culture that was widely accepted until Wenger would come in, and change things around. And obviously, Wenger is credited as basically extending Tony Adams' whole career, giving him a kind of a second wind. But in the end, Adams would spend 57 days in jail. But again, this was not enough to derail Arsenal. They were on a mission and they were keeping pace with Liverpool,
they've
done incredibly well. Obviously, despite the fact that Liverpool under Dalglish were looking kind of back to their best. But interestingly enough, Crystal Palace were one of the teams causing a stir. And with good league form, they were in around the top five throughout the first half of the season.
Yeah.
So again, I think it's...
They were decent though, weren't they? Because they had a good cup run and it was a good team. It wasn't just... Obviously, they had Ian Wright, Mark Bright.
Yeah. Alan Pardew.
John Pemberton and Pardew, Nigel Martin in goal.
Yes, of course.
So they had a good team.
Yeah. Under Steve Coppell.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So I think Coppell was obviously a little bit gutted at missing out on the England job because apparently he was other favourite next to George...
Graham Taylor.
Sorry, I was about to say George Graham. Yeah, that would not have been right. Yeah, Graham Taylor. Palace would go on, spoiler alert, to finish third this season.
Wow.
So just behind Arsenal and Liverpool, which...
So I wonder if it... Right, he went to Arsenal a few seasons later, didn't he?
I think so.
He must have been there, like, doing really well.
Yeah,
for Palace,
exactly. Yeah, so Christmas would come along. The clash between the two unbeaten teams, Liverpool and Arsenal, was top billing, basically, who's going to take the lead or take the advantage in the title race. And it would be Arsenal in a very convincing 3-0 victory, which would cut the gap between the two teams to only 2 points. So heading into Christmas, Arsenal suddenly got the big mo. She's decided to move from the north down south. She's going to the Big Smoke. Big Mo and the Big Smoke.
Sounds like a bad sequel.
Exactly, yeah. But as I said, in the new year, Palace would continue their great form and they would be within 6 points of the top two. But Arsenal, for the first time, would take a lead after a 1-0 win over Everton. And Liverpool, who had a game in hand, could only manage a 1-1 draw with Wimbledon. So Wimbledon, yet again, being a thorn in the side.
Yeah, they love it, don't they?
They do, our bogey team. But any vague dreams of an unbeaten season for Arsenal were dashed.
I was going to ask this.
Yeah. So unfortunately, just in the new year, January, Chelsea become the only team to beat Arsenal this whole season with a 2-1 win over the Gunners.
No way.
So not a traditionally, like you might have expected, you know, the resurgent Man United. Or
Chelsea weren't a big team then, were they?
No, exactly. So it was a bit of a kind of shock that they lost that.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, an even bigger shock would happen in February as, like you described, Kenny Dalglish would incredibly resign with Arsenal, with Liverpool top of the table.
I mean, hindsight paints a different picture, doesn't it?
Of course.
At the time, it was enormously shocking.
Yeah, I've got a big, it's quite a big quote from Kenny Dalglish, but it took him years to clarify exactly his reasons. From memory and from what I could read, at the time, it just seemed like he was speaking about, obviously, a bit of the strain, but he didn't elaborate a lot.
No, he didn't go
into it. Obviously, this is in the wake of Hillsborough. And
I think, because obviously Hillsborough had been nearly 2 years since then, I think it was probably much more all the stuff that came after Hillsborough.
Exactly. It's what he represented. He basically became the spokesman for an entire city going through a tragedy.
Yeah.
He obviously talks about the fact that he'd been through kind of four funerals in a day at one point, him and Marina, his wife. But it was still shocking nonetheless. And it came after that incredibly emotional, incredibly dramatic 4-4 draw with Everton in the league.
That's right. Cup.
Kenny Dalglish would step down and Ronnie Moran would take over as caretaker manager, but he would only be there for a few months. But I found this quote from Dalglish when this is more than 10 years later. So it's quite long, but I feel like I'd rather him explain in his own words. Although I didn't realise it at the time, Hillsborough was the most important factor in my decision to leave Liverpool in 91. I thought to myself, why should I feel any pressure? The people under pressure were those who had lost their loved ones. In truth, I'd wanted to leave Anfield in 1990. year before I eventually resigned. In the 22 months between Hillsborough and my resignation, the strain kept growing until I finally snapped. By Christmas, my body was covered in big blotches and rashes. Wow. A few even appeared on my face. I saw a doctor nearly every day for injections. He used to come to the ground, bend me over, give me an injection in one cheek, and send me home like a pincushion. I would go to bed, wake up the next morning, and go back to the ground and try and start all over again. I don't know whether the result was a result from general strain or stress, but my lack of tolerance towards the children probably upset me more. I hate to see the surprise and hurt on the faces of my children when I bawled at them.
Wow.
So it obviously was... That's
some real life stuff.
Yeah, he was trying to basically hold off a mental breakdown,
yeah.
A nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
So obviously incredible that he soldiered on for another year when he had been feeling it and every day being kind of taking injections and trying to get over the stress.
But you just don't know, do you? That's the thing. You had no idea that was happening at the time.
No.
A lot of people were just saying... He's bottled it because Everton kept coming back.
Exactly, yeah.
As if one game would
is enough
bring about
to,
it. Yeah,
yeah exactly. But following Dalglish's resignation, it was Liverpool stalwart Alan Hansen who would then retire as well following a year-long injury.
Really? Wow.
So in the space of a month, Liverpool lost Alan Hansen and Kenny Dalglish. And basically, off the pitch, the strain continued for the club and the supporters of Liverpool because the 90-day inquest into the Hillsborough disaster would record a verdict of accidental death of the 95 Liverpool fans who had died at Hillsborough.
Yeah.
So there was no justice, which obviously began the Justice for the 96 and now 97 campaign. But back on the pitch, as spring would roll around, Arsenal would take a 5-point lead at the top of the division, basically, with Dalglish gone and Liverpool in shock for a number of factors. The league was Arsenal's to win now.
Is this Roy Evans took over?
No, this is Graham Souness coming back from Rangers.
Oh, he came straight in, did he?
Yeah,
oh,
so okay, right. Not straight in. Ronnie Moran is in charge for a couple of months. But yeah, as Arsenal would take a lead after a 5-0 home win against Villa, so they were 5 points clear now. At the other end of the table, Derby County are 12 points adrift of safety. Derby just don't have a great record. Or at least, they had a couple of years in the First Division, but like when they went out bad.
I kind of feel like it's the same teams for the next 10 years that just came up, went down.
Yeah, yo-yo
and they're
clubs.
Saying it's the same now, aren't they? Like these clubs that are just coming up and just cannot cope.
Yeah, totally.
With the jump.
It
feels similar here.
Yeah, absolutely. I always feel like Norwich are the quintessential team for me.
Norwich, Derby, West Brom.
Yes.
Sunderland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. interestingly enough, you mentioned Sunderland. They occupy the other relegation place.
There you go.
So in order to bring some stability, though, at the top of the table, Liverpool would appoint Graham Souness on a permanent basis. They'd got him from Rangers.
The irony of that statement.
I know, yeah. And, you know, he does keep Liverpool competitive this season, but things very quickly.
Is that just riding on Dalglish's coattails though?
Well, I don't know, because Ronnie Moran struggled a little bit and he would have in theory been a similar thing, but you get a new manager bounce and I guess
true.
Obviously Souness was an incredible player for Liverpool, so there were high hopes for his kind of managerial stint here. But 2 weeks away from the final game of the season, Liverpool would lose 2-1 to Nottingham Forest, which would hand Arsenal the title, the same day that Arsenal would then go on to beat Man United 3-1 with league top goal scorer again Alan Smith scoring a hat-trick.
He loves it, doesn't he?
He does. He was a much better striker than I kind of knew.
I didn't rate him. It's because he never scored anything spectacular, but he did
lots of headers.
He scored goals, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, so
well done.
At least twice he was top goal scorer in the division.
I mean, this is the era of Boring Boring Arsenal, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I totally forgotten about the whole Boring Boring Arsenal thing.
In some ways,
summarized that.
Yeah, he kind of, it's not emphasized.
Embodied?
Yes, thank you.
There we go. Yeah, he did embody that kind of, Boring Boring Arsenal. Although nowadays, an 18 conceded and winning by
it's
only losing one game, you take that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of teams would go,
totally,
you know, I'll
man.
Be boring, boring. For that. But Sunderland, unfortunately, as you mentioned, would be relegated to the second division. They would lose to Man City, as we mentioned, and Luton Town would beat Derby 2-0. So it was a bottom of the table clash between Luton and Derby, and that win was enough to see Luton survive, like I said, for the third season running. Crystal Palace, as I mentioned, would finish third, but, and this is cruel as we come towards the end of the report, they would finish third, but they were denied a place in Europe because the ban on Liverpool was surprisingly lifted a year early.
Oh, right. So
English
Liverpool
teams
took the
were
space.
Back the year before.
Yeah, yeah.
Liverpool were to serve at least one more year, but I don't know if it had been explicitly said, but there would be no mention of the ban being lifted. So the second place would have gone to Crystal Palace.
Right.
But whether it was because of everything that had happened with Hillsborough,
yeah,
and that sense of, okay, we need to cut Liverpool a bit of slack. I don't know if there was like global sympathy for what Liverpool were going through, and maybe that's why the ban was lifted early. But yeah, Crystal Palace, it's cruel,
Steve
really.
Steve Coppell getting stitched again.
I know, yeah, their chance to go into Europe denied by the fact that the ban was lifted and Liverpool were now back in European competition. Just cruel, really, especially because it was lifted at the end of the season. So, Palace
playing for it all season.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. They would have thought, right, amazing, we get to represent ourselves in Europe.
Yeah, that is not right.
No, it's pretty cruel. But with that, we'll go on to some significant others.
4 added minutes. And Gerrard! Oh! Stunning!
Well, take a bow, son. I mean that. Take a bow. You have been immense.
So as you spoke about earlier, Tottenham Hotspur would win the FA Cup for the 8th time, beating Forest 2-1 in extra time in the final. But this is the game in which Paul Gascoigne suffers his cruciate knee ligament damage, causing his obviously very, very famous transfer to Lazio to be put on hold as he kind of recovers from the injury. I didn't realise he went for £8.5 million. I didn't realise it was that much to Lazio. Absolutely incredible. And I think we've obviously covered it in our FA Cup final episode, which I'll link in the description here. But nice little gesture as they all went to visit Gazza, didn't they?
That's right, after the cup final,
and they kind of went to his hospital bed to kind of celebrate with him.
Yeah.
But Gazza was on another level and was obviously very pumped for this FA Cup final.
Just a tad,
But unfortunately, would suffer that horrible injury. And would you, I don't know, is it fair to say that's not the beginning of the end, but it definitely affects Gazza, doesn't it? Because he obviously goes to Lazio, has an interesting time.
He was a different player, wasn't he, after that? I can't, it's hard to think. Obviously, he did very well in Euro 96, but he wasn't the same player in terms of like bursts of pace going around players.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember a time when he did, again, what he had done that season.
Yeah, I mean, he was... You know,
he did it at Rangers a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah.
There's some impressive goals, but people put it down to Scotland, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Which probably has less credence because it was a competitive league, or more of a competitive league back then.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, as you mentioned as well, Man United would mark the return to European football by winning the Cup Winners' Cup 2-1 against, do you remember the team they defeated?
Is it Munich?
No.
Who was it?
It was Barcelona.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow.
They beat Barcelona 2-1, who at this point kind of had a bit of a reputation for flattering to deceive in Europe. Yeah.
So that would have been Cruyff's Barcelona, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it would have been.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And wow. I think they go on to win the actual, not Champions League, the European Cup in 92, is it? With Ronald Koeman's.
That sounds right,
against
yeah.
Sampdoria, Koeman's free kick.
Yeah.
But it was Mark Hughes who would score both goals for Man United and give them a taste of European victory, obviously a long, long time since Man United had been there. But again, we're starting to see now, okay, in crunch clashes.
They Man turn
United,
up.
Yeah, exactly, turn up. I think Man United finished sixth in the league, so not incredible, but I think it was a vast improvement on, I think they finished 13th, was it the year before?
Yeah,
11th,
it was, yeah,
year before,
yeah,
something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
So it's obviously, we're starting to see now.
And it buys, I mean, obviously in hindsight, it's easy to kind of see, well, we started seeing, but at the time, sixth might not have been particularly agreeable, but the Cup Winners' Cup.
Yeah, it was
would,
a big deal.
Again, you know, currency for Fergie gets another crack.
Yeah,
you know, for another season.
Well, it's two seasons in a row. He's got silverware now.
Yeah.
So, he just knows how to win, doesn't he, Fergie? That's the thing.
That's got him going, really, until he got the league. This was, you know, that was the name of the game, really, for top managers, was you've got to be seen to succeeding somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, similar to what they say, you know, winning the Carabao Cup. No one cares
until you win it, yeah.
And then it's currency.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously that was English teams going abroad, but bringing the abroad back to home was Josef Venglos. He is a foreign manager. He would take over as manager of Aston Villa, and he became the first foreign manager in the First Division.
Is that right?
Yeah, so
wow.
Josef Venglos is a good pub quiz
the beginning.
Thing. He was the Czechoslovakian coach.
Yeah.
Back in the day,
right.
But he would be gone by the end of the season. Not a great signpost for
that's probably why no one remembers his name. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But how much that would change when we look towards today? Although, actually, over the last probably 2 or 3 years, we have seen a bit of a resurgence in British managers. But there was a time in that early 2000s when English managers were really struggling. But interestingly enough, this season, sticking with United, they would offer a long-term professional contract to a young 17-year-old youth project product by the name of Ryan Giggs.
Really?
Yeah, so this is his season. So they hand it over to him and he signs it, and he would actually make his debut in the following season.
Right, okay.
United would also sign Soviet winger Andrei Kanchelskis.
I loved Kanchelskis.
Yeah. Even as a Liverpool player, there was something really appealing about him.
He was a legend. Yeah,
so they signed him for a cool mil from Shakhtar Donetsk.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kanchelskis becomes this cult hero at United. And again, we're starting to mention these names now. Kanchelskis on one wing, Giggs on the other. I mean, it's looking good.
Yeah.
Which I think coincides, as it Sharpie start kind of tailing off now?
I think when you knew you had Giggs coming through, it's probably Giggs coming through, which was, you'd imagine, the beginning of Fergie going, all right, this youth academy is producing. Yeah. I mean, obviously the class of 92 is when they won the Youth Cup.
Yeah.
So that probably turned his head a little bit. And Giggs, I guess, had been in the top level that season.
Yeah, you would have thought so.
So there was, you know, three seasons later was when that, you know, youth team effectively took the field on the first day and got smashed by Villa, and Hansen said what he said. But this would be, I guess, the beginning of, okay, I'm going to buy a few players. Mm-hmm. There's a new way I'm going to try and do this.
Yeah.
Which is unthinkable.
I know, it's crazy,
but,
isn't it?
You know, that's, you would have had to be thinking that years before in order for
it's 3D chess by Ferguson.
It is,
you sometimes just think, can he see the future with some of the decisions he makes? Absolute genius.
Yeah, absolutely.
But finally, and I just thought it was an interesting carrot to dangle about how football is going to change next year with B-Sky B. But also, interestingly enough, Jack Walker will complete his takeover of Blackburn Rovers at the end of this season.
Yeah, narrative.
Exactly. So we start to see now the first kind of really big investment in transfer fees.
That's right.
In the English First Division.
Yeah, the idea of buying the title.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'd seen kind of big transfers happening, mainly in Italy, over the last kind of couple of years. Italy signing the best players in the world.
Yeah.
But now we start to see the kind of seeds being sown for English football competing and willing to spend the money. But yeah, it's Jack Walker who would take over Blackburn Rovers.
That's 91 and they won it 95. Wow.
That's right. I mean, it is 91, but really it kicks in at the end of the season in the transfer window, but they start buying after the 91 season, ready for the 92 when the Premier League begins.
So were Blackburn in the top league?
Yes, they were.
Right, okay.
Blackburn were in the top.
Yeah.
So yeah, so crazy. So with that dangling over, come and join us next week to find out how Blackburn improve and what happens in the league.